From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from radio's golden age. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll open today's program with a request I received recently from my good friend Jim Pemberton, who is the program director of WQNA, our affiliate in Springfield, Illinois. He asked about a specific episode of the CBS Radio Workshop. This was Columbia's second attempt at experimental radio theater, running during 1956 and 1957. The episode that he inquired about was entitled I Have Three Heads, program 69 in the series. This is a study in tape recording, and more specifically, a study in the tape machine and its three heads, erase, record, and playback, respectively. Magnetic tape was still very much a revolutionary technology in the mid and late 50s, and anyone not familiar with audio tape and the principles thereof would become quite familiar with it by listening to this broadcast. It originally aired on May 26, 1957.
Passing tape over three heads, one for erasing, one for recording, the third for playback.
And the CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind, presents I Have Three Heads, a study of the techniques, the possibilities, and the improbabilities of tape recording. Today's workshop was conceived and created by CBS radio engineer Mort Goldberg. In today's workshop,
Mr. Goldberg has been aided and abetted by... Hey, hold on.
Slow down. Wait a minute. Too fast. Too...
That was Stu Metz. Nice guy, but loves to talk, like all announcers. Aided and abetted by... Aided and abetted by a writer, a director, a... Who needs him? All you need for a good bang-up tape job is a good engineer like Morty and a trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly tape machine like me. That's all you need. Morty and I, we put our heads together. His one head and my three, and we can do anything. Yes, sir, anything. Uh-oh. Who's this coming in? Don't they know this tape room's closed until tomorrow morning?
Okay, Bill. Tape room 18's clear. Ready to take her inside there?
Right.
Maintenance men. Prod you, poke you, take your insides out. Regular little Dr. Kildare's.
Man, these new machines get heavier all the time.
You said it.
Lift a couple of these every day, and you could bend steel bars in a circus.
Right.
New machine. What gives? Am I on the way out?
Okay. Let's put it down for a minute and rest. I'm tired, boy.
Get a cable. We'll have to stretch it to the new box. Over in the corner.
I got it.
Well, what are you waiting for?
What about tools? You got them?
All except the wrench that fell out of my pocket. In the elevator.
I'll go get it.
Easy. Let's take the old machine out or we won't have room to work. These tape rooms aren't any bigger than a cell.
Right. Which one of these old machines goes?
Don't you know?
I don't know. Won't you?
Joe didn't tell you himself?
I thought Joe told you.
Okay, skip it, skip it. He's out. We'll have to wait till he comes back from supper.
Well, that's maintenance men for you. They can tell you transistor 205 connects to pole 83 on the BX subtransformer, but when it comes to replacing one of the three experienced machines in this tape room, they should go back to plumbing. Sure hope it won't be me. Say, maybe this new machine knows who he's replacing. new here, aren't you?
That's obvious at first glance, I should say.
Well, we were all bright and new once. I'm Howard Ampex, Model 200. And you?
Gerald Ampex, Model 350.
We must be cousins.
Distant, I'm sure.
Wait till this time tomorrow. Wait till you've worked 12, 14 hours steadily. Fast forward, rewind, stop, edit, fast forward, stop, edit, fast forward, dub, loop, rewind. I hope I'll see you after a week.
I doubt whether you will.
What do you mean by that?
I saw how you trembled when I was ushered in a few minutes ago. You're quite sure I'm here to replace you, aren't you?
Oh, am I? I heard those maintenance men talking. I remember every syllable of every word, like a good tape machine should.
I'm quite aware of what they said.
Are you? Let me play them back to you. Remember, the tape room door opened, and then Frank and Bill started talking?
Okay, Bill. Tape room 18's clear.
Right.
The new machine inside there?
Right.
Well, what are you waiting for? Let's steal her.
What about Joe?
Joe comes back from supper. Get a wrench and stretch him out in a box.
Right.
Okay, let's skip. The elevator man's in my pocket. Let's lift, take her out, and sell her.
Well, now, Gerald, which of us machines is going out tonight?
Howard Ampex, that's the most dishonest thing I ever heard.
What's dishonest? I didn't change a word.
You changed the order of the words. You changed the whole implication of their conversation.
Cousin, you sure have a lot to learn about tape editing.
You mean that's what we do here? You...
Certainly not. We don't change meanings, that is. You're right. It is dishonest. That's why tape recordings are thrown out in the courts of most states. That's why editing for broadcast takes an entirely different turn.
There was a...
What's that?
A voice on the tape room floor. Just part of a day's work. An hour's work, more or less.
It took a whole hour to get that?
Let me explain. This morning, Morty came in with a fella named George Vikas. Produces a show called Update. Vikas and Morty had a German student on a piece of tape.
I got to know a few students. My own impression from America students was that there was a...
Now, Gerald, is that clear?
That there's more...
Well, it's rather hard to get the drift.
Of course it was. With radio, people are listening on small sets. People are listening in cars. Things have got to be very clear. You play something like that all over the country. People think something's wrong with their radio.
So how did you save the country?
What? Oh, Morty and I go to work. Morty wants to start at the beginning of the student's words, so he punches me into rewind. Here we are, back at the beginning. Morty punches my start button, and the tape starts unreeling from the feed reel to the take-up reel. It passes by my three heads, one for erasing, the second for recording the sounds and words that are fed into it, and the third for playing back what's already on the tape. It's this third, the playback head we're using now, as we catch the student's first words.
I got to know a few students.
Morty punches my stop button. Back we go to find that,
What's that very odd noise?
Manual operation. Morty's working the machine by hand.
Well, really, by hand?
You'll have many a hand laid on you before you go back to maintenance for your first checkup. And many a razor blade, too.
Razor blade?
We're coming to that. Morty's found the, Now he opens the gate, exposing the heads. He marks the spot for the cut. You'll hear him dropping the pencil.
Where's the razor blade?
My boy, never let it be said we tape machines give any external evidence of the anxiety, the pain, the shock of having a sharp razor blade passed across us a dozen times an hour. The next sound you hear will be the snick of the splicing tape, the tape machine's band-aids. Then the tape is put back in the gate. The gate is closed, and we're off again.
My own.
What happened to the words you were editing?
This is a pro job, son. Morty goes on to tighten the space between the words my and own. There you have it. Now you'll hear what Morty's edited so far. Taking out the tightening the space between the my and own.
A few students. My own impression.
Uh-oh. Another to come out. And an im from that impression. So Morty makes a mark after my own, pulls the tapes by hand this time, and marks the tape ready to cut after the first im.
My own.
That was me rewinding. Now, here we go forward.
My own impression from America. Students.
Another to come out. Let's see how fast Morty can make this.
America. Question from America students was that there was a that there is more.
Stop.
In
what's the matter, Gerald? Are you shaking your heads,
Howard? It can go like this all day.
It's a tough grind, but let me show you how it will sound after an hour or so. That's when you're proud of yourself and your engineer.
I got to know a few students. My own impression from America students was that there is more in the people of this country than that kind of materialism which the tourists expose.
Well, that's very interesting. That's... Howard, are you crying?
Excuse me, Gerald. It's just so clear. So beautiful, the work I do.
Too bad I haven't some soft music for your emotional jag.
Music? Now, that's where you can have some fun. Have you seen My Fair Lady?
My Fair Lady? What's that?
A musical show I wrote.
Oh, you?
Well, I helped, in a way. Morty and I taped some of Julie Andrews' Cockney pronunciations, and Mr. Harrison making with phonetics. And we taped a funny babble-babble of women's voices you hear on the My Fair Lady record, too. They promised me 2 seats, but I never got them.
Yes. Did I mention that I play classical music extremely well?
You did. As a matter of fact, you'll probably be very good at cleaning tapes.
Cleaning tapes?
Bringing foreign tapes up to American broadcast quality. Jim Fassett, he's our music commentator who has a program here on Sunday afternoons, World Music Festivals. He goes to Europe and brings back orchestras and singers in concerts American audiences might never hear. But listen. That's not good broadcast quality, is it?
Sounds like the Oskaloosa Little Symphony.
On us American machines, yes. But remember, Gerald, these tapes are made in Europe. Different machines. Jim and Morty and I work on these European tapes to restore the original quality. Take this piece of tape. You and I switch back and forth. You play the Fassett, Morty, Howard American version, I'll play the original tape. Here I go.
So good night, folks.
What in the world was that?
A piece of Jack Benny tape that Morty and I lost this afternoon. Wondered where it was.
Does this happen often?
Not often enough to my way of thinking. Boy, could we have fun. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. However, let me give you a case of where Morty and I did mix some tapes deliberately. You like band music?
Military, college, circus, jazz, or street corner?
Military. Not one, but four of them. This same fella, Vikas, that I told you about, he and Morty and I put together an audition for a show that hasn't been broadcast yet. A show called Sounds of the World. That music is the band up at West Point playing. We also got tapes of a band at Buckingham Palace, another band from France, and still another band playing in Red Square in Moscow. We also got tapes of four sergeants, one from each country, and let them give the command to march. For international cooperation, how do you like this?
Soldats!
Company!
Fusils sur l'épaule!
Of the world. Four military bands from West Point, England, France, and Russia. Maybe they ought to trade the UN for a good tape machine, eh, Gerald?
I like that, Howard.
Sort of liked it myself, if I do say it as shouldn't.
Say, Howard, what's that tune?
That tune? Oh, it's a little number I wrote myself.
Oh, before or after you wrote My Fair Lady?
Well, to edit this statement correctly, I, little old Howard Ampex of Tape Room 18, am probably the only tape machine that had a song especially arranged for him. For years, Morty has played tape backwards and forwards and upside down. But he has never had the chance, until just the other day, to find out what happened when an orchestra taped a song backwards, and then I played it forward again. Says Morty to himself, what happens to the instruments? So that's where Hank Silverne entered. And this is how Hank arranged T for Two straight. Now, I taped that, and here's how it would sound if played backwards. You see? Almost everybody's done that, including the 2 million people who own home tape recorders. But now came the job of orchestrating T for Two backwards, so that the musicians began with the last note and played it through to the first note. Here's how that sounded. We had seven top musicians. Hank at the piano, then guitar, bass, drums, vibes, sax, and trumpet. For musicians who could play T for two straight in their sleep, this backward arrangement almost drove them to the point of turning in their union cards. But you should have seen their faces a few minutes later. Here's what we've been working for. A popular song, T for two, orchestrated and played backwards. Now, reversed and played forward so that the tune is recognizable. Did you ever hear music like this?
Out of this world.
Well, let's say just barely in it. First time anybody but Morty and me and Hank and a few others have heard that music.
Gosh, Howard, I feel so low.
Low? About what?
I didn't recognize you as a pioneer.
Don't be corny and call me the tape machine's tape machine. It's all in the day's work. Come on, cheer up, Gerald. Uh-oh, someone's coming.
Well, Bill, all set to get this new machine rolling?
Right.
What number machine are we taking out?
Number 20. Got your wrench?
What wrench?
The one you left in the elevator earlier.
I got it.
Well, hold it a minute. I forgot mine.
I guess it's goodbye, number 20.
Cheer up, Gerald. Old tape machines never die. They just go back and get new heads.
If they come around with those two tickets they promised you for My Fair Lady, shall Morty and I tell them where you are?
Don't bother. Morty made his own special version out of three recordings. Charlie Applewhite, Sylvia Sims, and Dinah Shores. Want to hear it just for kicks?
Fast forward, stop, start, and just for kicks.
I could have danced all night. I could have danced all night and still have been.
Today's workshop, I Have Three Heads, was conceived and created by CBS radio engineer Mortimer Goldberg. Mr. Goldberg has been aided and abetted by the following: Charles S. Monroe, writer; Ira Ashley, director in New York; Jackson Beck as Howard; Ian Martin as Gerald; and Ralph Bell and Bill Quinn as the maintenance men. Hank Silverne, arranger and conductor. Stuart Metz, your announcer. The workshop wishes to thank James Fassett, Irving Gitlin, George Bekas, and others who contributed portions of program material used today. Next week, from Hollywood, a satiric fantasy written by and starring Stan Freberg about the entertainment competition in a desert spa roughly paralleling Las Vegas. America listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
The CBS Radio Workshop. As I said, Columbia's second attempt at experimental radio theater. The first attempt, which existed in the late 1930s, was entitled The Columbia Workshop and was an equally outstanding series in the experimental vein. This broadcast, I Have Three Heads, program number 69 in the CBS Radio Workshop series from May 26, 1957. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch with the program, our email address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And if you'd like more information about the radio theater, then please visit our blog and website. From there, you can view full program playlists. You can also stream and or download this and previous episodes of the radio theater at your convenience. All of that is available by heading over to qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. This is Upstate Radio Theater program number 1601. Up next, an episode of Night Watch, one of many police dramas that aired on radio in the 1950s based on actual police cases from official police files. In the case of Night Watch, all of the stories taken from the files of the Culver City, California Police Department, and the series narrated by Detective Don Reed. This was also a CBS broadcast from February 24th, 1955. The episode is entitled Knife, Bread, Body, and Getaway. You're on the Night Watch with the Upstate Radio Theater.
What you are about to hear is real.
I've been married for 33 years to this one man. And all of a sudden, I'm setting the notion to divorce me.
How did you get that black eye?
He gave it to me.
Well, it looks like he choked you, too.
That's right.
Well, you really took a beating, didn't you?
You're not kidding.
Gosh.
You know, nobody can handle me. I don't care who they are. Now, murder them. So help me. I'm just a plain man, a good man. So help me.
Ready to go down?
Yeah, I'll be right there, Perk.
What can you do about it?
I have to excuse me, ma'am. We'll get a chance to talk about this later, maybe. Bye. This is Don Reed, police recorder. We're just moving out of headquarters to start the night watch. We'll be working in Detective Unit 5-6. Tonight's crew is Sergeant Ron Perkins, Detective Jim Ross. All dressed in civilian clothes, sport shirts, overcoats. What do you say, Herbie?
Down
here. We got 5-6. Now we got 5-6. Well, at the curb, our car, black sedan. Like a thousand other cars on the road, no identification of the police car. This is Detective Unit 5-6. That woman I was talking to, the people you meet tonight, they're not actors. This is it. This is real. This is Night Watch. You know that woman I was talking to upstairs? I never did get the rest of her story.
What? 5-6 in service.
Control 1-2-5-6-10-4, 6:06 p.m., 5-6 in service on the Night Watch.
I'm sorry, Don, what'd you say?
Well, I never stayed around long enough to find out what charge that woman I was talking to was booked on. She sure took a beating from her husband. How come she's in jail?
Pretty good reason. She stabbed him.
Oh.
Night Watch, the actual on-the-scene report of your police force in action. There are no actors. There is no script. Every voice, every sound is authentic. The investigations are recorded as they actually occur. Night Watch, presented with the cooperation of the Police Department of Culver City, California, W.N. Hildebrand, Chief. And now we switch you to Detective Unit 5-6, now on patrol somewhere in the field, and to the official police recorder, Don Reed.
Control on the motor 24 and 26 clear, back in service. Control on the car 45T at Westerly and Washington. That's Westerly and Washington. Ambulance traffic, code 3.
Westerly. That's just a couple of blocks back there.
5-6 to control one. We're right on that ambulance traffic. We'll stand by till the radio car arrives.
He must have just gone by that corner just a couple of minutes ago. Flipping a U and heading back. Normally we don't handle traffic, but apparently we have injuries. Now let's get down there and stand by till the radio car arrives. Right ahead now. There it is, several people running.
First, now we're down. Looks like a bad one.
Yeah, I'll check. Well, here's the picture. Curve of the road, a heavy sedan smashed up against a telephone pole. I don't see any other cars around. Will do. Perkins lighting flares. Let's get over to the car. The broken glass appeared to be just ladies in the back seat. There's a man up front sitting upright. He's dazed, the door's thrown off by the impact. He's lying on the sidewalk. You hurt, man?
I don't know. He's over here somewhere.
All right, ma'am. There's an ambulance rolling.
I think something is broken.
Really? How are you, ma'am?
I don't know. I'm just so scared. My shoulder.
Mm-hmm. Shoulder injury?
My nose is bleeding.
Yeah, well, just stand by. An ambulance is rolling. We'll get right to him. Just relax right there. We'll get right to you in just a moment. How are you? You're pretty badly.
No, I'm okay. Where's my husband?
All right, just stay right here, ma'am. We'll find him. Evidently, there were four people in the car instead of three. Strong smell of alcohol in there. Sergeant Perkins just leaving a victim lying over here in the gutter. Apparently, the husband of the young lady must have been thrown 60, 70 feet by the impact. What have we got around here on this boy?
He's dead.
Bystander, staring in front of car.
Looks like the motor of that thing was driven right back into the front seat, as far as I can see.
Well, that's murder.
Sure is.
Radio car. Ambulance here first.
Doc, there's three in the car over there. There's one over there in the gutter. I think he's a DB. You want to check him out?
Yeah.
Doctor over to check the victim lying in the street. Verify. Coroner will handle. His assistant helping the injured in the car. Let's get over there.
Come on, though. Don't worry about it. She's got a bad breathing in her leg.
No, I'm all right. I'm sorry.
Watch. Don't worry.
I can.
Assisting two into the ambulance. Stretcher for the third.
Who's first, huh?
It's all right.
Go ahead, you just get in the car and everything.
You get in the car. We're going to take care of him. You get down and get taken. We're going to take
care of him. Wife in a state of shock, looking for husband. I haven't told her yet. I have to leave it to the doctor when he gets to the hospital to handle.
Better include that in your report. We'll notify the coroner.
Okay.
You don't need us anymore. We'll see you later. Five, six to control one. On this TA at Westerly in Washington, 4-5-T is handling the accident report. Three of the victims have been sent to the hospital. One is dead on arrival. Will you advise the coroner of that?
Control 1 to 5-6-10-4. We'll notify KMA 394.
Isn't that funny, you know? Even though you don't know too much about life and death, you know, you're not a doctor or something. The minute you walk up on something like that, you can just sense the guy is either alive or he's dead.
Liquor involved. I wonder how you can call it an accident.
You are listening to Night Watch and following the activities of Detective Unit 5-6 on its tour of duty. Remember, the people and sounds you are hearing are real, and the investigations are recorded in the field as they actually occur. We'll bring you the final results of tonight's action at the conclusion of Night Watch. And now we switch you back to Detective Unit 5-6, somewhere in the field, and to the official police recorder, Don Reed.
5-6-1, do you have a radio car available in the vicinity of Jefferson and Overland? We'd like to have them assist us in stopping a car we're tailing.
Control 1 to 5-6, stand by.
We're southbound on Jefferson. Been following a car for the last few blocks. Been doing some pretty erratic driving. Being a detective unit, it isn't our job to handle traffic normally, but besides, we're in plain clothes. But there's just something about this car that doesn't look right. There are two male occupants, possibly three. It's just a little bit too far away to be sure. We're checking now to see if we have a uniformed car here in the vicinity and get them to stop.
Control 1 to 5-6. We have no car in your immediate area. Do you want us to roll one from another district?
5-6, no. We'll handle it.
Control 1 to 5-6.
Slipping a red lens over our white spotlight. Moving in behind the car. There goes on our red light. There's no sign of them pulling over. They're still going. Now, there's two, three heads just bobbed up. Now they're wheeling into the curb.
All covered from the right.
And the usual precautions. However, just a routine check. Sergeant Perkins up here on the driver's side.
To get out on that side of the car, please keep your hands out of your pockets. All you roll out the other side of the car.
Three young fellows, late 20s, early 30s, assembling over on the sidewalk. Jim Ross keeping an eye on them. Well, let's have a look in the car.
Might be good burgers. Nice and that, what is it, half inch? Half inch crowbar.
Back seat. Bar or Jimmy, and flashlight, bottle of whiskey, half empty, and a box, could be the lower half of a cash drawer, a couple of checks in it.
These are loaded.
Let's move around the car now, talk to the first suspect.
How much? How drink? Where are you heading for now? Head for Long Beach to pick up on Wyatt. You got an operator's license?
Yeah.
Now, who owns the green bag in the back?
Suspect nodding his head.
Where did you get it? You got a receipt for it?
No, sir.
When did you buy it?
About a week ago.
About a week ago? How much you pay for it?
$21.
Have you used it yet?
No, sir.
Have you ever been arrested?
No.
How about you?
No.
How about you?
Yeah.
Three of these, Brandon.
Ross been checking out the trunk.
All new tools in the trunk. What do you think?
Maybe good burgers.
Car register, deal?
Yep.
Is it your name?
Yep.
Burke, I wonder why they'd have two and three of the same kind of tools.
That's a good question. I'm going to run a record check on those guys. Jim, I'll get some answers on those checks in the box. I'll be back in a minute.
Ross, box in hand. Questioning suspects. Let's move in.
Cash box, tell me something. Which one is that?
The one that I took that check out of.
Well, let's see it. I don't even remember.
Two of the suspects examining the box.
Well, that's a little guy Paul, do you, wasn't
he?
Huh?
I must have been there. Why would he pawn this box with a check in it?
Well, I don't know. I'll tell you.
He pawned the whole sack to me. See? In Palmdale. For $20. He's a good friend of mine.
This box had a $5 check in it.
Could I see it?
Sure. That check's worth $5. It hasn't been canceled out. Doesn't seem, just looking at it from my viewpoint, doesn't seem strange to you that a man would pawn all of these tools, but there's about $35 to $40 worth of tools alone. For $20 and in the mess, there would be a $5 check, which you know nothing about. You've never seen it before. I mean, just from my viewpoint, that seems a little strange.
It does, yeah.
Can you explain it in any way?
No, I can't. Well, what seems to be the doubt?
Do you want my honest opinion?
Yes, sir.
From what I've seen so far, it looks like you boys have been going into a building and stealing.
I can't explain that I've accepted these tools under a pawn for $20. I can't prove that?
That's a little difficult for me to believe, I'll put it that way.
Oh, a little difficult. Well, I can prove it. Well, I can get the fellow that pawned them to me.
Well, we may have to do that.
Okay.
Another thing, in your car in the back seat, there's what we call a jimmy. You know what a jimmy is?
A jimmy?
A jimmy.
No, I don't.
A jimmy is usually used in house burglaries where they jimmy a window. It's similar to a crowbar. I'm just pointing out my viewpoint. I'm not calling you a burglar. There is reason to believe that you are, but I'm not calling you. You asked me what I thought, and I'm coming.
Yes.
We'll see how this radio check comes out.
That's right.
Jim, can I see that?
Sure.
I'm on a record check on these fellows. They're not wanted for anything. Two of them got records in the East. Car check's out okay. Belongs to them.
There's something that just doesn't gel right, though, you know?
No, I'll go along with that.
Yeah, we haven't got anything to go on, but let's put the tools and stuff in the car. Take them on to the station. We can talk to them there. I got a radio car to transport them in.
Good idea.
Well, we'll take up this discussion again down at headquarters. Could be a very plausible answer to this. We'll have to check it out anyway.
Wait a minute, what's wrong with you, Jim? Let him go.
One suspect just jumped in the car and has taken off.
Bring those guys over to the car and put the handcuffs on them.
Five, six to one. Come in, code two.
Go ahead, 5-6.
5-6-1, a 459 suspect just took off from us, headed west on Jefferson towards Sepulveda. He's in a 1949 Nash Ambassador, blue in color, license number 2 X-ray 53117.
Okay.
2 X-ray 53117. Will you advise Englewood?
You give me a
rest, department.
Yeah,
suspect may be headed for the Long Beach area.
Attempting to follow the suspect. We've lost him in the traffic.
Well notified.
He's got a big head start. Before we can get the two other suspects in the car.
459 suspect in a 1949A.
Control 1 radioing the information to our other units.
53117.
Ross in the back of the two prisoners. We're up front. We can't take up fast pursuit. Too many people in the car. Can't jeopardize the lives of the prisoners.
Well, do you figure he'll turn off on Sepulveda?
Yeah, probably go in town. He won't get far. I've got his driver's license and all his identification. The car belongs to him. We'll get him.
Yeah, let's take these guys back to the station.
Well, where I sit, somebody sure got something to hide.
Prison. Got out December 11th in 1946.
46. Been in no trouble since then.
Outside of drunk and disorderly conduct and assault battery.
Where were you going at night?
Well, I was going to Long Beach to get my wife and baby.
Why would your brother take off?
I wouldn't know.
Was there any reason for him to take off? Was he hot? Don't see him.
It don't take even 5 minutes to find it out. You know his name.
Yeah,
anything. Can't you find it out?
Yeah.
You could find out if I'm hot to anybody.
We have a pickup out on your brother. I mean, it'd be very simple if we could notify somebody to have him come in before he gets picked up. Because if he tries to do anything foolish, he's been drinking a little bit, he might get shot.
He ain't hot. He ain't hot in a while.
Carrying a bunch of tools in the car, nobody can seem to get straight on the story and accounting of them. And then they check them out, and one of them takes off. Everybody in the spot.
Well, he's got the car, so up to you guys.
Yeah, Perkins.
Perkins, this is Robert, Sheriff's Office. We've got your 459 suspect in custody.
Oh, great. Where'd you pick him up?
We finally got him just outside of Lenox. He had his wife and youngster with him and was heading south, and we finally caught up with him.
The wife and youngster with him, huh? Hold them all. We'll be down there in about an hour, okay?
Guess what that conversation was. The sheriff's office picked up your brother and had his wife and kid with him. You cool your heels off here, and we're going to go down and see him, see what kind of a story he comes up with. Jimmy, you want to stay here and do the reports and take care of him? I'm going to pick up Sergeant Walter and go on down there.
Okay, come on, fella. I'll take you back to yourself.
Big time, right?
Short, stocky, unshaven.
Prison.
Heavy scar across his cheek.
In Tennessee?
Yes.
How was it?
Pretty rough.
This little electric drill that was in the car, where did it come from?
I bought it.
You know the electric drill? I mean, the one in the back of the car, back of your brother's car?
Yes.
You bought it?
Yes.
What make of it?
I didn't look at the make.
You didn't look at the make? No. And how can you describe it? Tell me what it looked like. Is there anything on it? You can identify it? Price tags or anything else like that?
No, sir.
And how about all these tools?
I told you.
What about the little gray cash box with the checks on it?
Yeah. I don't know about that.
I'll tell you this much, I have no desire. I mean, I'm not worried about you, but I have no desire after seeing your wife cry and come apart at the seams because her child was going down to juvenile hall and she was going to county jail. I mean, that I don't like that. And I'll do everything I possibly can to get her out, whether you talk or not. Until we can find out some information or get a crime report or some details back, that's where she's going to stay. There's not a thing that I can do or you or anybody else. You're Conway, there's no doubt about that. I'm not playing on your sympathies or anything like that. I'm just telling you, you can take it one way or another. I don't care.
Well, I'm going to stole the tools myself.
You stole the tools yourself? And what was it, a burglary?
Yes.
And where did you steal them?
On the...
And when did you do that?
I believe it was about a week ago.
And were you by yourself when you committed this burglary?
Yes.
Neither one of the other two brothers were with you?
No, sir.
How did you enter the place?
I went through the back door.
Did you use a tool to break the door?
Or? I used a brick to break the glass like that.
You broke the glass with a brick? Well, when did you put the things in your brother's car?
Last night. I told him I was going to bring him down here and sell him.
Down where to sell him?
In Los Angeles.
And the checks? Where were the checks?
The checks were in the drawer.
In the drawer of the desk?
I mean, I got a regular checkbook, payroll checkbook.
Out of the bed?
Out of the bed.
And
checks.
How many checks have you passed of those checks?
Four.
Four so far? How much? What's the amount you made them out in?
$77 a piece.
Each one was $77? You passed all those already?
Yes.
And where did you pass those checks?
At Lancaster.
All in Lancaster area?
Mm-hmm. Hey, Kurt. That's about it. Come on, fella. You want to go with us?
Well, this is one time betting on a hunch paid off.
What you have just heard is real. The investigations were recorded as they actually occurred. And now back to police headquarters and Chief W.N. Hildebrand.
The first voice heard on night watch was a woman booked on assault with a deadly weapon. The maximum penalty upon conviction is 10 years in the state prison. The traffic accident, the second case, speaks for itself. Tonight's final investigation of the three burglary suspects, oddly enough, is very important to you, the average citizen. Detective Unit 5-6 stopped this car because of excessive speed and a hunch. Normally, plainclothes units do not work traffic, but good police work is based on observation and an intangible something called hunch. Of course, sometimes it pays off and sometimes it doesn't. But it does show some of the things that turn up during routine checks. My point is this. When police officers stop a car for speed or some minor violation, they have no idea who is in that car. Is it stolen? Was it used in a robbery? Or is it just a good, solid citizen, a little careless? You know who you are and what you have done. The police officer doesn't. He has to approach with caution and act with suspicion until he establishes who you are. I hope tonight's final investigation will give you a bit more insight into one of the problems facing your law enforcement officers. If we can help bring about this understanding, then we have a meaning for Night Watch.
Thank you, Chief Hildebrand. You have been following the on-the-scene reports of your police force in action. Every voice, every sound has been real. Night Watch, brought to you through the cooperation of the Police Department of Culver City, California, is produced by Sterling Tracy and Jim Headlock, with technical advice by Sergeant Ron Perkins, and described in the field by the official police recorder, Don Reed.
An episode of Night Watch, as originally broadcast February 24th, 1955, on CBS. We'll wrap up this hour of old-time radio with an episode of Incredible But True, a syndicated transcription series from the early 1950s in much the same vein as Ripley's Believe It or Not. This is program number 53 in the series, Room 117.
There is an element of pathos, as well as comedy, in the curious story of the Cumpstons of Leeds, for they were people to whom incredible things shouldn't happen. But that such things did happen to them can scarcely be doubted. Else, why would they have been standing in the British Railroad Station in their nightclothes at 2 o'clock in the morning?
It was Patrolman Boswell of the Bristol Police who first heard them. He'd been having his usual late cup of tea in the restaurant adjoining the railroad station, and he had just stepped out into the crisp winter night when their screams of terror reached his ears. Patrolman Boswell ran swiftly toward the station waiting room, hoping that he would be in time to prevent the bloodshed which obviously impended. The sight which met his eyes was one that he was destined never to forget, for there was no sign of blood, no hint of violence. There was only the ludicrous spectacle of two elderly people clinging together with all their might in the midst of the great empty room. Both were barefooted. Both were clad only in nightcaps and nightshirts.
Here, here. What was all that noise about?
Are you a policeman, sir?
Aye, that I am. And being a policeman, I got me orders not to allow folks to be running around the streets in the condition you're in. Now go on home, both of you.
But you don't understand.
Hurry up now, or I'll have you arrested on a charge of intoxication.
My wife and I are respectable citizens. We are not intoxicated.
Then what are you doing in public in your nighties?
We had to leave our hotel in a hurry. We had no time to dress. We've had a very bad fight.
All right, then, I'll help you. I'll get you back to your hotel.
The hotel?
Never. You can arrest us. You can hang us if you like. But we are not going back to that hotel.
Patrolman Boswell had no choice but to arrest them on a charge of disorderly conduct. Standing before the police magistrate, they told their story. They were the Cumpstons of Leeds. It was their first holiday in 30 years, and now this terrible thing had happened. This ghastly experience they had had in room 117 of the Victoria Hotel. First, there had been the voices. From all around they had come. From the walls, from the floor, and the ceiling. And then there'd been knocking, and finally the agonized groans, as if someone in a nearby room were dying.
I think we ought to get out of here, Martha.
I think we ought to get out of here, Martha.
Is it an echo? Or is somebody mocking us?
Is it an echo? Or is somebody mocking us?
I don't know. All I know is we're getting out.
And with that, Thomas Cumpston leaped from his bed. But scarcely had his feet touched the floor when...
Martha! The floorboards! They're moving! They're giving way under the...
Oh, look out, Thomas! There's a hole opening up in the floor. Look out!
She, too, jumped up from the bed and, seizing her husband by the arm, pulled him back just in time to save him from falling into a yawning opening in the center of the room. And then, as if with one mind, they turned and climbed out of the window and ran toward the railroad station screaming for help. It may have been a collective hallucination. It may even have been an outright lie. But given the character of the persons involved, given the fact that they were found at the station in a condition which must have been a source of pain and embarrassment to them, how can we doubt that they were forced from their hotel by an intolerable experience? An experience incredible but true.
Incredible but True, a syndicated series from the early 1950s, narrated by Ken Nordine. Program 53 in the series, Room 117. Wrapping up this hour of the program, I'm Jake Longwell. Thank you for joining me. Tune in again when you can for another hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.